Turn your Bibles to Isaiah chapter 57 this morning. We're going to start there. I'm going to read a lot more scripture, but we're going to just use that as our reference point this morning for turning to. A lot of the stuff, you've heard me say it over and over again, a lot of stuff that I want to teach about here in Sunday school is things that I've run across in our own devotions and stuff at home, and things that I think about throughout the day that I've read or that we've talked about at home briefly with the kids and devotions and everything. But I've been thinking about this all week long, and I don't know, sometimes it's a catch 22 on these things. If you think about them too much, then it's just a bottomless thing. Where do you find a box to put it all in? And if you don't think about it very much, then you don't have much to say about it. It seems like one's an injustice to the subject and another one is a overindulgence of it. So the happy medium, we're always trying to find that, right? But I want to read this morning here, Isaiah 57, verse 13. It says, "When thou criest, let thy companies deliver thee, but the wind shall carry them all away. Vanity shall take them. But he that putteth his trust in me shall possess the land and shall inherit my holy mountain." This is God talking to the children of Israel through the prophet Isaiah. "When thou criest," he said, there's going to come a day when you're going to cry for me. You're going to need me. He said, go ahead and run to all the things you've been leaning on all this time, the things you've put your faith in besides me. And he said, they're all going to go away. The wind is going to blow them all away. It's going to come a day when you ain't going to have anything that you've always put your trust in. It's all going to be gone. But if you put your trust in me, you will possess the land and you'll inherit my holy mountain. There's all kinds of scripture in the Bible about trusting. He's talking about the scriptures, the Bible verse, the alphabet scriptures that the kids all first start learning. I'd already thought about this, but, I can almost remember all of them. They were just ingrained into the fiber of my brain as a child, And, W, what time I am afraid, I will trust in thee. It was just little scriptures like that attached to a thing that you're learning when you're a child. There's 188 verses in the Bible that say something about trust. A lot of them are in Psalms. David was a man after God's own heart because he trusted the Lord. There's a lot that's being taught nowadays as far as like the matter of love, okay? Trust and love. They seem almost synonymous. It's one of those things that people just kind of they just give it the passing glance and they just synonymize them. I guess that's a word. They make them both synonymous with each other, love and trust. People get married and they love each other. But time goes by and things turn out to prove that they don't trust each other. And people do God the same exact way. God says, blessed is he who puts his trust in me. He didn't say, blessed is he who loves me. Now, he did say, thou shalt love the Lord thy God. But when you think about this matter of love and trust, it's kind of like the chicken and the egg. Which one came first? Everybody has a different opinion on that. They really do. People say, I love you, so I trust you. But that's not really how that works. You ever thought about that? Love is a product of trust. The only person in the universe that ever loved someone and it wasn't a product of trusting them was God loving us. He loved us while we were yet sinners, and he died for us. We love him because he first loved us. But we don't It don't work that way in the realm of humanity. You know, and this is just a whole nother little side note, rabbit hole, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, this thing we've been talking about imputed faith and imputed righteousness and all that kind of stuff, and how that God gives every man a measure of faith. You ever thought about this, that God puts a little faith in you? He gave you a free will to make a choice. That's putting some trust and faith in you. He's the one going out on a limb here a little bit after, when he don't have to. And he's putting a little faith in you that you'll make the right decision based on what? See, what do people base their love or their trust? What do they base it on? When I meet someone and I start getting to know this person, what do I base whether or not, I mean, do I meet someone and, man, I love them people. I just love them. No, it don't work that way, okay? We like to pretend it does in relationships between men and women, you know, the love at first sight, falling in love, all this kind of thing. And it just don't work that way. Love is a product of someone being trustworthy. The reason why we can love God in faith, completely in faith, we can love God, is because everything he's ever done for mankind is to prove to him and to show him that he is trustworthy. The Lord's never done anything to let anybody down. You know, he is completely trustworthy. And he asks you, trust me. He doesn't just say, I just want you to love me. I did all this just so you'd love me. Does it work in a human's relationship when they just do things for other people so they'll love them? No, what do we call that? We call it insecurity. We call it someone trying to buy someone's love. It's like children who you see their parents indulge them with every good gift that they can think of. And other people on the outside looking in says, you know, what in the world are they doing? The kid 100% of the time just about don't care anything about their parents. There's no relationship built there on anything except benevolence and selfishness. Benevolence on the giver's part and selfishness on the taker's part. And people, we need to understand this, and it's hard to keep everything in line here the way I had it planned out, but here's the thing. The world out there has a messed up idea of what love and trust is. The devil seen to that in the very beginning. God put Adam and Eve in the garden, and he gave it to them to dress it and keep it. He put some trust in them. He had some faith in them. He only had one rule. You know, just don't eat this tree. Everything else, you can do whatever you want, but just not this. And the devil came not to Adam, and I'm not being chauvinistic when I say this, but, you know, he came. See, Adam was first, and he knew God. He was a friend of God. Adam knew him. He trusted him. He knew his character. He was his friend. So the devil knew that that was not the soft target. He knew if he went to Adam and said, hath God really, I mean, is that really what he meant? Adam would have stood up for him. I believe that. I believe that the devil knew he would not deceive Adam because Adam trusted in the character of God because he knew him. He'd spent time with him. He'd walked with him in the evenings in the garden. I mean, we don't know how much time transpired between Adam being created and when Eve came along and the dynamic changed in the garden. But we do know that during that time, that Adam and God were the ones who communed with each other. He knew him. He knew his character. But Eve came along, and she didn't know him as well. She didn't trust God. You realize that? That's why she was able to be deceived. And when the devil said what he did, it wasn't trying to get her to love him instead of God. It was to get her to disparage the character of God so that her trust in him would be destroyed. And from that time on, love and trust has been flipped upside down. And the world's philosophy about what love and trust is and the order that they exist and happen in has been completely inverted and then corrupted beyond that. When boy meets girl, what is always, almost 100% of the time, the first thing that they're attracted to each other about? It's the physical appearance. You know, that's just how it works. And if you see some ugly fella with a real nice looking lady and you talk to her and say, "What in the world are you thinking?" She'll tell you almost 100% of the time, "He's a good man. He's a good man. He may not be rich. He may not have it, but he's a good man." Well, how come some people are attracted to each other and that's how it all, I mean, it's all built upon that foundation. That's where it starts. And then other people build it on the foundation of someone's character. When you statistically line the two different kinds of people up, what has longevity and what doesn't? And we've talked about this all month, about how influenced we are by the world's philosophy in everything. You know, I've said it a lot of times, you've heard me say it, but, you know, we are more affected by how the world thinks than we know. A lot more. And it's not just in insignificant things that matter or don't matter or could go either way. No, it's in this is fundamental. God set up relationships between men and women in marriage, matrimony, in that way, so that we could understand how our relationship is supposed to be with him. They mirror each other. That's how they're supposed to do. And so that we can treat each other the way that God treats us and how we're supposed to treat him. And then at the same time, our relationship with him, there's a deeper understanding that comes in both departments from the relationship with both things, you see. So wouldn't the devil want to corrupt that? Of course, he'd want to destroy it so that you wouldn't have a relationship with God. And then just a natural side effect of that would be that your relationship with each other would be screwed up. And look around us. It's that way. Okay, so trust and love. You all have heard stories about people in the past that, not necessarily an arranged marriage by other people, but where two people would meet, and because of duress, because of a situation they were in, because, you know, there's a lot of different stories you've read about the circumstances surrounding this, but they would meet, and in 2 or 3 weeks, they'd just get married. And then they'd just make their life together. And people look at that and say, how in the world? They'll either glorify it because love was just so powerful, or they'll disparage it because how in the world could you even know somebody in 2 or 3 weeks? What was wrong with you? But, you know, those people, every story I've ever read about them is that they lasted to the end, all the way. And they had a good life together. I've read how in Jewish custom, even today, a lot of their marriages are, how can you say it? They're not arranged, but they're arranged. They're highly influenced by the people around them, like their parents. Because their parents are not just watching for someone who they think that their child would grow up and be able to get along with, or they'd have beautiful children, or, you know, this man's real successful, she'd have a good life with him. No, they're looking for people who they know. See, they know more about what their kid is going to grow up and be than what the kid does. They got more wisdom when it comes to that kind of stuff. And I heard a lady's testimony one time where she said that she married a man, that her mom and dad were very much in favor of her marrying him. And she said, "I didn't even really know him, but I trusted my mom and dad. And they trusted him. And they trusted his parents. And his reputation was solid. And she said, I didn't know if I loved him or not because I didn't know him. But I knew that my mom and dad trusted him. And she said, that was enough for me. And she said, we got married, and for over a year, they weren't intimate. It was just a period of time where he gave her the chance to get to know him. And he put some faith and trust in her because she put some faith in what was right too. And she said, turns out mom and dad were right. He was trustworthy. Her parents seen that in him, and she trusted them. And see, when we go looking for a mate, and I mean from my own personal experience and story, that was not what I was looking at. We all do this to a certain degree. We check that box. You know, are they a good man? Are they a good woman? You know, do they have good character? Well, what does most people do? I read a thing the other day. I heard the story, and it was awful. It was terrible. About this woman, and it's happened 1,000 times, I guess. But, you know, she met this man at work. He was a wonderful guy. Everybody thought he was a great guy. You know, everybody that met him, I mean, he was just super nice. And he just treated her like a queen. And on the second day of their honeymoon, she found out that he was a raging, you know, drug addict. He was a pill head. And he just beat the daylights out of her. And for 5 months, he just kept her locked away somewhere. And she lost her job, you know. And she finally got out of the situation. But, I mean, she barely escaped with her life. But she had checked that box of his character because she'd asked around and everybody, you know, what do you think about him? Oh, I think he's a nice fella. And that was enough. But she didn't investigate his character any further than that. People see what they want to see. Now, having said all this about trust and love and how it's so messed up in our world and even the way we think about it, think about God. Think about our churches. Think about Christianity nowadays. And think about your relationship with God. How do we present Him to other people? Do we try to just get people to love Him because we love Him? Or do we try to convince people? See, it's always been, you know, soul winning and that kind of thing has always been kind of, you know, I've sat in the classes and all that, and what you're pushed to do is that you need to make them believe that they need what you got. Well, at face value, yeah, I can see their point of reasoning, but the fact is that you're trying to make a lost world love God, a righteous God, and they don't know what love is. Their idea of love doesn't even include trust. They don't. Because they started out with love and then tried to make trust grow from that, even in their own marriages. And how many percent, what's the percentage of it that ends the wrong way now? Because they got it backwards. And then you go to them and you try to get them to love your Heavenly Father the same way they love pizza, or a good movie, or the mountains, or a real nice vacation, or the beach, or their girlfriend, or their boyfriend. When you say you need to love the Lord, that's immediately how they look at it. And they're like, why do I need to love Him? I don't even trust Him. How could you believe that they could even grasp the concept of trusting the Lord when they don't even know what love really is? Now, don't get me wrong. I don't want to cast a bad light on someone loving their wife or their children or their husband that don't know the Lord. Because that's not true. You know, people out here love their children. They love their wife and they love their husband. But can you honestly that know the Lord, can you say that the knowledge of God and the having experienced His love in your life and having come to the knowledge of His trustworthiness in your own life, can you not say that you understand love better now? That love has a whole nother dimension to you than it did before? If you know Him, yes, it does. It does. You know, And it's hard to sit back and watch. You know, why do you think you see people make a start towards the Lord and then they fall away? Well, I would venture to say that it's because they do not understand His character. Most people don't take the time to get to know Him. You know, they date Him. You go on a date and He buys dinner. He opens the door. He takes you home. He takes you for a walk. He takes you here. He takes you there. He gives you gifts. He does all these things. And to the world, that's how you prove to someone that you love them. But let me submit to you that character is not defined by benevolence. Character, the character of someone. I know people who are rotten to the core, wicked as hell itself, and they are the most benevolent people I know. They give thousands upon thousands of dollars to people. They're always the first one to volunteer for the soup kitchen. They're always the ones to start the fundraiser for the family's house that burned down in the community. And yet they're not faithful to their wife. They are perverted in some weird way. Or they're profane. Or they're not honest in business in other places. So if I was to judge their character based only upon their benevolence, I would be wrong. And see, people approach human relationships this way. And they base their understanding of someone's character on what you do for me. You know, I had a boy the other day, and that's what he was talking about. He's not married, and he's, you know, desperate for a wife. He needs a wife in his life. And he just commenced to tell me all of the things that why he needed a wife. For this and for that and for being able to keep my house and for, all, you know, wash my clothes and all. I mean, he was being ridiculous about it, but at the same time, everything he said was all things that she could do for him. And I stopped him and I said, hey, what's she get out of this deal? What are you going to do for her? You know, I mean, you ain't buying a mule here. I mean, that's not what we're doing. You know, well, what are you thinking? This is a two-way street. What are you going to do for her? Well, that's where the conversation ended, because I guess he had never thought about that. He just looked at his needs and then, you know, the desperation that he's in. And people do God that way. Yes. People do each other that way because they don't understand what love is, because trust don't even enter into the picture in the beginning. I've heard you tell the story about Grandpa when you went and asked him, can I marry your daughter? And he said, why do you want to marry her? And you said, well, because I love her. And he said, you don't know what love is. I think about these things a lot more now because of where I'm at in life and where my family is in life. And honestly, a lot of people would say there's no right answer to that, but there is. You know, we ought not be trying to raise our children to be someone who's lovable. We need to raise our kids to be someone who's trustworthy. Do you want your daughter to marry a man who's not worthy of her trust? Absolutely not. If she can't trust him with her love, with her trust. Because see, trust is the currency between two people that then produces love. You don't love someone because they trust you. And you don't trust someone because they love you. You trust someone who trusts you. And then because of that, love is born. That's how it works. And when you go into a relationship and you're trying to love somebody and you don't know them at all, that's why you see women and men who get married and have children. And on the surface, it seems like everything's fine, but they are so insecure about their position in the relationship that the only thing that they have to demand the fidelity of their mate is the threat of what I can do to you if you are unfaithful to me. If you do this, I will take everything you have. If you do this, I'll take your kids away. If you do this, I will make your life miserable. If you do this to me, so you better, what, love me? Who can love someone like that? That does not invoke love. No. Because there's no trust. What if God did us that way? What if He said, you better love me or I will crush you? Then would our love be real? Would we ever be able to trust Him? No. People try to live for God with that ideal, that ideology of Him in their mind. Yes. I do right, because if I don't, He'll beat me. Whom the Lord loveth, He chasteneth, you know. You know, I used to tell my kids when they were little, and it was correction time. I mean, that's when we were doing a lot of the spanking and the stuff you don't want to do. But I would tell them, and I remember you telling me when I was a child, I'll never do this to you again if you'll just do right. This doesn't ever have to be this way. Our relationship does not have to exist in this realm. If you'll just do what I ask you to do, if you'll just do right, you know, and have some faith in me that I'm not going to just make you, you know, split wood and mow the grass and rake the gravels and just be my slave, or else I'll beat you down. The Lord is not a slave master. And nor is a man who loves his wife, or a woman who loves her husband, or parents who love their children. They're not your slaves. She's not my slave. I'm not her slave. And if you approach it that way, then 100% of the time there is no trust. And so how can you... Here's the thing. Love can be feigned, but trust cannot. You can pretend to love someone, but you can't pretend for very long to trust them, because that's when it gets real. Trust is something that is not... There's no fakery in trust, unless it's deceit. But it's short-lived, and it shows itself right away. You can't fake it. There is people who I love, but I don't trust. I love them because of who they are, but I can't trust them because they're not trustworthy. They've proven themselves to be untrustworthy. Family, friends, they're not trustworthy. I love them. If they would become trustworthy, all would be forgiven. That's the wonderful thing about God and how He dwells with us. Are you trustworthy before God? Can He look at you like He did Job and say, have you considered my servant Job? He's upright in all his ways. He is trustworthy. He trusted Job. Think about the profoundness of that. God in heaven had enough confidence and trust in a human being and His love and trust in him that He turned the devil. He told the devil, you touch him. See what he does. I don't think the Lord trusts me like that, because I'm not trustworthy. When I think about how faithful I've been to Him. Because see, it's not in the wonderful things He does, like the thing about the boots. See, that doesn't earn my trust. It humbles me because He loves me. And He does these little things like that to just remind me, hey, I'm still trustworthy. You can put your trust in me because I'm trustworthy and I love you. Let me show you. You know, everything is not a litmus test to see if He is trustworthy anymore. See, everybody lives, you know, so many people live with their husband or their wife or even their kids or their family. And everybody's character is on trial all the time because there's no trust. Because people betray each other so much in every little thing, whether it's something humongous or even little, you know. Even if it's something, and that's what I try to make, you know, the kids understand. It's, you know, during the time of your childhood, I remember I just wanted you to trust me. You know, and it was It used to make me mad because I didn't think you trusted me. But it never entered into my mind that I needed to be trustworthy. And that I was being trained to be trustworthy, you know. That's what responsibilities are given to kids, you know. You know, if your job, I'm not picking, but if your job is to take the trash down on Monday nights and you do it 10 times in a row, I'm not going to think about it much because that you take care of that. But then Tuesday morning, I hear the trash truck down there and our trash cans aren't sitting at the end of the driveway because it was forgotten. Then your character in that matter is now kind of in question because trust was put in you and then you didn't fulfill your commitment. And see, when you stand before the altar and you say your vows to another person and you don't know their character enough to even know if they're trustworthy, how can you say in sickness and health, for richer, for poorer, till death do us, as long as we both shall live, till death do us part? Well, it's kind of a roll of the dice, ain't it? And nobody really spends the time. That's the deception of dating. Yes. Because you never are yourself when you're dating. It's all fake. Your reality is built upon false information. Your decisions and your assessment of someone's character is built upon information that they chose to give you. Like long distance relationships, over the phone relationships, it's hard to really get a good finger on the pulse of what's really going on because you only ever hear one side of something. That's why it's not real smart to take a real, you know, in stone position on some situation when you only know one side of the story. Because the truth lies somewhere in between. Because no one is going to just be straight up honest with people. Because it makes them look bad. It makes them think less of you and your character. If they see your flaws, if they see your shortcomings, if they see your faults. And we sit and think about it, and the Lord knows us. He knows our heart. He knows the thoughts and intents of our heart. And yet somehow we feel that we're going to just, you know, date him in the sense of, you know, he's only going to know what we are in church. You know, see, that's how we present Christ. And then we wonder why we just don't seem to be able to have an effect on anybody. When Abraham sent his servant to get a bride for Isaac, he didn't go. He sent his servant. He sent things to prove that he was not lying about his wealth. And he sent a servant that knew him well so he could vouch for the character of the man that he was asking her to come back and marry. And she'd never even been to there. Never even knew him once. But she took the information that was given her and made her decision based on the facts that was given her. They weren't deceptive. You know, Abraham wouldn't have sent him down there to tell her a lie. And so she didn't believe one. And that's why when she got where she was going, she got off and went to meet him. And, you know, they were together till they died. Well, you mean it wasn't love at first sight? It wasn't her soulmate, the one person out there for you in the world? Hogwash. That's a worldly fantasy. It was her making a conscious choice to trust him. To trust her, his father. To trust his servant. And see, that's what we're going out here to try to get the lost world to do. We're servants of the Lord. We're trying to get them to trust us. But see, what we try to do more often than not is we go out there and we try to get them to trust our character. For me, I'm a good guy. I'm a nice fella. I'm an honest man. You know, we laugh about these guys that want to make sure you know that they don't lie to people. They're a man of their word. And y'all, what do we always say? Better watch that guy. And it's almost always the truth. They never keep their word. They always are the ones who will cheat you if they get the chance. Your character speaks for itself. And other men's lips will praise you for your character. That woman in Proverbs 31, the heart of her husband doth safely trust in her. He don't have to go around bragging about how much faith and trust he has in his wife. No, his heart doth safely trust in her. He hath no need of spoil. He goes about his business, and he doesn't have to wonder if she's being faithful or if she's being lazy or if she's taking care of things or if she's got character. No, the things that she does makes his heart trust in her. The things the Lord's done for us has been more than enough to make our hearts be able to safely trust in him. And we ought to be conveying that to the world. You know, how offensive is it when you know a man and his wife, and you know that man is a good man, and he has character, and he's been faithful, and he's a hard worker, and he does without. He wears the shoes with holes in them while she gets new ones. He, you know, eats Spam while his kids and his wife get the good, you know, I mean, he puts them before himself. And then you see her talk to someone else and disparage his character. Because of her own shortcomings, she'll throw him under the bus to not necessarily make herself look better, but just make both of them look like they're not, you know, she drags him down to her level. How does that feel when you see that happen? What's that make you feel? You despise that woman. She's a wretch. She don't deserve that man. Well, do we do that to the Lord? Because see, here's the thing. Like I said, benevolence is not what proves someone's character. Trials and hardship is where you see what a man's really made out of. You really see what someone's faith really is when things get tough. You know, people have a preconceived idea of what their life is going to be. And so they make this plan and they meet their husband or their wife, and then they're going to, you know, date for a year or two, and then there's going to be the proposal, because that's all staged now. You know, I mean, because of social media and everything, the whole proposal is staged. Someone's got to be in the bushes with a video camera, and then you have to feign happiness. Oh, yes, she said yes. Yeah, everybody claps in the restaurant. Woo, you know, and it's the video that gets all the likes. And then you have this big Pinterest wedding with all of the signs and all the bells and whistles. And everything is just like you ever dreamed it was. Your dress is perfect. Your pictures are awesome. Everybody does. The ring bearer doesn't cry or, you know, whatever. And then you're going to get married, and you're going to have at least 2 or 3 years there where you're going to get your little home established and paint your white picket fence. And then we're just magically going to have children. And we're going to have twins, and we're going to have new cars, and we're going to have a new home, and my basement's never going to leak, and we're going to go to vacation wherever we want. And then you get married and you can't have kids. And now all of a sudden God's character is called on the table, because he's not give you what you dreamed of. Or let's say he does bless you and here they come, but then you lose your job, or your car breaks down, or life just starts falling apart around you. And then we start to see what you're really made of. Do we lean on his? Do we trust him? You know, trust in the Lord with all thine heart. Lean not to thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he will direct thy paths. You trust someone like that, you're going to love them. Because they're trustworthy. What comes first, trust or love? Well, trust comes first. You know, I didn't get to read all my verses in Psalms about trust, but, you know, David trusted the Lord. He was a man after God's own heart, despite his shortcomings. Because at the end of the day, he didn't blame God for all his own shortcomings. He didn't call God's character into question. He put himself at the bottom and said, I'm the reason why this don't work, but I trust you. There was forgiveness for him. Trust. We got to have that first, or else there really won't be love in our marriages, in our relationships, even with our children, and especially with God. Trust Him. He's trustworthy.